Good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening, or even good night. I don't know what time you're going to be listening to this. And I think it's kind of funny that we've got more greetings for the latter half of the day than we do the former. I wonder why that is. No time to get into that now, though. We got an episode lined up today. I'm Kylie Payne, and you're listening to Back to the Fire, and I went down to Montevallo recently to have a chat with Anatomical, and that's what her name is on social media, so that's what I'm calling her on here, and we've had overlapping social circles. I've seen Anna here and there, and apparently, yeah, we've been to some of the same venues and such. So I mean, like, and I think that's one of the things about Birmingham. It's like, you know, even though it's a small town and everybody kind of knows everybody, you may not necessarily know that you know everybody, and there can be a lot of, you know, really cool folks that are, you know, just around the corner. You just, you don't know where to look. So, anyways, yeah, I've heard some friends of mine mention Anna and some of the things that she's been up to. And I thought it'd be worthwhile to have a chat and get her on the show. Yeah, after our conversation, I really felt like, you know, I'm glad to know that she's out there doing her thing and just keeping on, cause yeah, it was a really inspiring conversation that we had together. In our conversation, we start off talking a little bit about some social activism, and youth organizing, and the importance of those things, and we go on to talk a little bit about some of her musical projects, as well as just like the music and DIY scene in Birmingham, and then we move on, get a little bit deeper, talk a little bit about mental health and the importance of mental health and sense of people in general. It's an important thing to do. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. The audio is not going to be the best. We were sitting outside at Eclipse, and anybody who has sat outside at Eclipse for any length of time knows that lots of big trucks hauling whatever like to come barreling down the road, and so I had to try to fix that in post. So I do hope you'll bear with me. Pretty soon I ought to be getting some better equipment to be recording these with. So Anna was kind enough to bring me a copy of her zine and some a CD with some tracks on it that I'm going to be splicing throughout the episode. I'm going to have one track right after this monologue, the other halfway through the episode, and the other at the end of the episode. So it's going to be, I believe, all three are tracks from the band Rumble Pack that she's a part of. So I hope you enjoyed the tracks, hope you enjoyed the episode, and I'll see you on the other side.
like, how was working with Hika?
It was really amazing. My summer fellowship was with ACIJ, the Alabama Coalition for Immigrant Justice, but we were working in the Hika office, the Hispanic Interest Coalition of Alabama. But so my actual, I guess, position, you would say, was with ACIJ. But it flew by. Like, it feels surreal that it's over. It was from, we started June 1st officially, and then it officially ended August 1st. But we, throughout that time, in addition to the other things we were involved with, we decided to start our own youth group for immigrant rights. It would be like under ACIJ kind of, but not necessarily strictly affiliated with it. And it's Youth of Alabama for Immigrant Rights. So the acronym is YAIR. And if you like know how to pronounce Spanish, we just started saying Yair. So not to say YAIR, but we had a DACA and DAPA workshop in June at the Adelante Center on Lorna Road. And it was an all-day workshop about DACA and DAPA training, like intake training. And whenever they asked the youth, I guess youth defined as 30 and like teens to 30, to go in our own group to discuss what we were, break off into groups, that's when the topic came up to make a new youth group. Because I definitely think that Hika and ACIJ are doing amazing work, but there is not a big presence of specific youth outreach, and it's not really any one specific at fault. It's just there's been attempts in the past to make these certain kind of youth groups happen, and everyone probably knows it's hard to get groups stuck together.
Yeah.
Especially since the constituency is, I guess, mainly targeted towards undocumented immigrants, so there could be some fear in coming out.
Sure.
And also that makes it a little harder to sometimes contact, but not necessarily because of where I worked and now the contacts that I have, but just because someone's undocumented, you know, doesn't mean that they're going to be wanting to be fully involved with the group. I mean, people only have so much time to give, but we, after that initial deciding to start the group, we had a social later that month. It was our first gathering after that. It was at a creek in Irondale. It was pretty just casual hangout. And then we went around and did a story sharing circle, which was really powerful to hear all different walks of life. And, of course, some people had been through, maybe I shouldn't say more than others, but everyone had been through a lot of things, a lot of different struggles going on. But just because certain people hadn't gone through certain things, we were still able to come together. And I consider myself an ally of it because I haven't had to know the struggle of undocumentation. I mean, I was adopted when I was 3 months old from Paraguay, and then I became a U.S. citizen when I was 10 months old. So I don't remember ever not being documented, and I never had to worry about not being able to go to college because of being undocumented and not having a social security card and all of those issues and things. So even though I was, for a very brief amount of time, I don't say that it doesn't count, but I've never had to go through those struggles directly, so I definitely consider myself an ally. But so then after the social, we planned, this past weekend we had our first workshop with Yair, and it was held at Hika. It was an all-day thing, and it went really well. We had a good turnout, and we did a story sharing circle again, which it's always a powerful thing, but so there were some new people there, or people who weren't at the Creek social. So and then I led a workshop on campus organizing 101. And then after that, another one of Yair's members led a community organizing, and I thought it was mainly the Yair workshop was an introduction to, this is like our works, those two workshops I just mentioned were giving everyone a pretty general overlook of, this is how we're going to get the word out there about this group. It's like, not everyone is in college there, or in, we had people there in high school, but not everyone is in school, but there's still ways to, I mean, that age, that general age group, like, college age group, I guess, I mean, I know that it can vary, but not just the age, but the amount of people that you have at one time, and areas, it's, like, students have more power than they realize, and so it was really important for us to inform our group about different ways to do campus outreach, because at first it seems like, oh, we'll just flyer or we'll just table, but I actually got the outline for my workshop on what to speak about from United Students Against Sweatshops. It's another organization I'm involved with, and we have a chapter at University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa. So one of the national organizers of USAS, United Students Against Sweatshops, was able to share the Google Doc with me, and I edited it accordingly for, there was a lot of USAS language that wasn't necessarily, didn't really fit my workshop because it was referring to their campaigns, and so I didn't want to confuse people. But, and then we had a workshop on, we did storytelling this past Saturday at the Yaya workshop, but the person who facilitated that workshop started off with a TED Talk video. It was really awesome. It was about 15, 16 minutes, but you know, some people would say, oh man, this video is long, but it was amazing. Like, I wanted it to keep going. I hadn't seen a TED Talk before, surprisingly. I think I'd heard it.
Do you remember the title of that talk?
I think I wrote it down, maybe, or put it in the notes, but I can't remember it off the top of my head. It was about storytelling and story sharing and how it's crucial. That I remember something that really stuck with me was that humans are programmed to share our stories, like we're biologically wired to.
Right.
And it was really interesting because it wasn't like over my head. Mm-hmm. It just was things that it seemed kind of obvious once he said it, but I never really thought of it that way.
And it's like the way I got the name for this podcast, Back to the Fire, is like the idea is like, you know, you've got like a campfire and you have to have somebody that's always there tending the fire. And then, you know, if there's a fire, then, you know, then people can come and gather around it. And naturally, when people sit around a fire, it's like the tendency is to tell stories or share experiences. And so that's the whole idea behind that. But
it's awesome.
Like when I first started coming to Montevallo here, like back in 2009, like I started seeing flyers for like SDS, Students for a Democratic Society, and like attended like the first meeting for that, and yeah, like it was mostly like we did stuff just like tabling and flyering for like different issues, and like it was like my first experience ever like trying to like, you know, self-organize. And I'm pretty sure it's you know, the same for the other people involved in the group. But, like, you know, I don't think we accomplished too much here, but, like, it was certainly, like, a learning experience, and there's a lot of lessons I learned from doing that I've carried on, and,
at least you tried.
Yeah, and, you know, made a lot of good friends from doing that, so, you know, I think, like, that was the important takeaway for me, but, like, we were able to go to a couple of the, like, we went to the regional SDS meetup, and then we went to the national SDS meetup, and, like, one of the big things, or, like, that I remember from that is doing a little workshop on, like, privilege, and I've seen, like, a video posted of this workshop being done recently where it's, like, you know, everybody starts out just like standing in a line side by side, and then whenever there's like a question, like if you can answer yes to the question, you take a step forward. If you say no to the question, then you just like you stay where you're at, or you take a step backwards. And then like after the series of questions is done, like you have like a physical, like being able to tell, like, you know, how privilege has affected, you know, certain people, and yeah, like going through that personally, that was a pretty powerful experience for me, and I'd like to see that sort of, you know, workshop duplicated and carried out, like, in other places.
That was actually going to be one of our icebreaker workshops this past Saturday. That was one that someone else in Yair who would help plan the agenda and set up the workshop had suggested. But they were going to facilitate it, and they had just had, like, a really hectic week, so they didn't facilitate it. And I did a more I guess it was more fun, like casual, silly one.
Mm.
I don't want to say more fun, but it was definitely more silly. So we didn't do the, we thought we were already going to do the storytelling, which gets pretty real.
Mm.
So then the stepping back and forth. We didn't want to make people feel too on the spot because we did have a couple of high schoolers who they chose not to share their stories or anything. So we didn't want to make them feel too excluded. Like,
right.
Okay, if we're taking up all this time to do these more intensive personal experiences, we don't want y'all to feel like you're not engaging. We're not engaging you just because you don't. Like, no one has to share it, you know.
Right.
It's a choice, so. But that was one of the workshops.
Cool. And then, yeah, like, I really like the idea of, you know, just, like, or, you know, like, starting early and, yeah, like, getting, like, you know, trying, like, you know, I personally, I've not done any work, you know, with, like, high schoolers trying to get, you know, that age group to organize. But I like, you know, again, like, from my own personal experience, I feel like, you know, if I had been presented with that opportunity, that would have been something that I would have been very interested at the time. So I think it's great that that there are people out there organizing that age group and letting them realize, yeah, the amount of power and influence that they do have, that, you know, it's just like it's they're not aware of, like, because I guess, like, you know, other people aren't telling them, like, you can do this.
Definitely. And even though apathy can be pretty rampant with that age group, with this issue, if they've been through it directly, which is a lot more people than you think, then apathy is not as prominent.
Mm.
Because, I mean, I think we had 2 13-year-olds this past Saturday, and they were there for the whole 8 hours.
Wow.
For our workshop. But they've both been affected very directly by immigration laws and back to HB 56 and all that.
Yeah.
The past few years. And it's mainly affected their families, but I mean, that's them too, so.
Yeah, like, I certainly remember, you know, HB 56 and all the, like, you know, some of the organizing that was going on around that. Like, we had a couple things, like, here in Montevallo trying to raise awareness about that, like, you know, again, with, like, making flyers and passing those out. And then, like, we even had, like, armbands, and it's like HB 56 with a big, like, you know, big red circle and an X through it, and that sort of stuff. And I think it's really, like, it's like I heard a story in the news, it's probably been, you know, a couple weeks ago now, but I heard him, I guess, like, talking about it on NPR about where, it's like some, an undocumented immigrant, you know, I guess, like, you know, committed a crime, and, you know, it's like, ended up killing somebody, and then, like, the parents were, like, very, like, you know, vocal and outraged, saying, like, you know, something has to be done about that, but then, like, you know, if you look at the statistics, like, you know, like, undocumented immigrants are statistically, like, some of, like, the lowest, like, you know, chances of like, you know, committing any sort of criminal act, because they, you know, they are at risk so much, and they try to, you know, yeah, I guess, avoid that. And so I think it's, like, you know, really unfortunate that yeah, that's, like, the knee-jerk reaction that some people have.
Definitely. And also this summer with ACIJ and my fellowship, we went to Chant Down the Walls in Gadsden outside of the Etowah Detention Center. It was Father's Day weekend, and we did it was titled the Father's Day Serenade. It was the band Los Jornaleros, which is day laborers. They played outside of the Etowah Detention Center and in the parking lot. And it was kind of a peaceful protest, but it was mainly supposed to be festive because it was for those who were in the detention center who weren't able to see their loved ones that weekend for Father's Day. And it was really well received by them. They were dancing around up there, and they were putting signs in the wall. I mean, well, in the window, and they're saying thank you. And of course, there was pretty heavy police presence guarding the front. I mean, it was a non-arrestable action, but when the band started marching up the stairs to play on the steps, the cops blocked it, so.
Mm.
But, I mean, it's to be expected. They tried. But they were still playing loud enough, the people up in the very top floor of the detention center were able to hear it, I think. And then the night before the chant down the walls, we went to, I think it was Columbiana, maybe. I went to it was a lecture inside of a church, and the NAACP talking about voting rights. It was really powerful speech. Several people had spoken, but I remember I got really lost on the way there because I thought it was meeting somewhere else. For some reason, I don't have a GPS. So when I got there, though, I got there just in time to see someone from ACIJ and HECA speak. And then after her, someone else spoke, and it was like, I wish I could remember some of the quotes. I just remember thinking, wow. It was pretty flooring, because we do forget that, like, the fight for voting rights isn't over. I mean, there's, so then the next day, before we went to chant down the walls, we did a march in Columbiana in the downtown part for the voting rights, and NAACP spoke, and it was really awesome. I remember it was hotter than it is today. It was pretty grueling, but there... The women were wearing long dresses and with long sleeves, and the men were wearing like full suits and jackets, and it's like, holy crap, like, it's so hot. But they were still dressed really nice, and they stood out in the heat, and so we were there in solidarity with that. And the other big trip we did was, I think it was July 10th, we went to New Orleans for one day. To restore DACA and DAPA. It was an action. We left the day before the action. That evening, we got there pretty late. We stayed in a hotel. We woke up really early the next morning to go to the downtown. And it was a lot. It wasn't just our group. We actually had to rent a charter bus, though, for just ACIJ. We had 55 people come. We had to tell a few that they didn't confirm in time, and we didn't know we needed more space, so we actually exceeded the amount of people we thought were going to come. But so we rolled in with 55 people, and there was so many other groups there. I don't even know how many, but that most of them were repping their T-shirts, so you could see that it was all different. We marched in the heat to a park. I don't know what park it was. And there was a speaker speaking in Spanish. I couldn't hear them that well, though, because there were so many people, and I was trying to stay in the shade. I know I should have... I wanted to hear them, but it's really, really hot. At some point, I felt like I was going to faint despite drinking so much water, but that's part of it, you know? I mean, you're out there, like, that's just... It happens to be a hot day, or if it's raining, like, we were going to do it anyway, so... Yeah. And then we went to the downtown, and there was a big action, and it was an arrestable action, but when it got to that point... I forgot what group it was. I wish I could remember the exact name, but some of them had chosen, like, they were all from the same group, I think. They were all wearing the same kind of shirt, and they had chosen to sit in the street. And when the cops came, they refused to get up, so they were arrested. And there was a paper mache, maybe, big puppet thing that was like it was a head, and it said, I think it said, Gobierno, maybe, something, supposed to represent, like, the fight against ICE, and so it reminded me of a couple of years ago when I took a Spanish class, we learned about some marches in Argentina, like parades, more so than marches, but they had really big puppets made out of all
I've
that,
seen
and it reminded
some
me
pictures
of that.
Of several events, or, you know, yeah, like, using that, puppet style. Mm-hmm.
And then there was another puppet thing at the march. It was an alien head, and it had capital I, capital C, capital E, ICE on it. And so it was almost like a haunting action, because it was so, like, I mean, these are what they feel like it represents. I mean, like, when people are called aliens and called illegal instead of just undocumented and retreated as these terms, it's just like, I felt like that's what it was supposed to represent, because it was straight up, like, traditional alien head, but then you had the other, like, and there was, the costume was so big that one person was in there holding up, the head, and then two people were, there was a person on each side with the arms moving it. I have a bunch of pictures of it on Facebook, but it was really good action, and like I said, some people got arrested, and there's a lot of people there. And then after that, there was another action down at the courthouse, but we couldn't really do both, so I chose to stay at that one. But it flew by these past 2 months. It was a lot of work, but it was definitely worth it. And just because I'm not a full-time, my full-time position stipend is up. We already have a plan for this, for tomorrow, actually, tomorrow night, to have a call for the Yair group, because we're planning other things, so.
Yeah. And, like, you know, I think it's important for, like, you know, individuals to do, like, the, like, you know, like, you know, writing representatives or whatever group it is, you know, you're trying to put pressure on and, like, doing, like, the call-ins and petition orders, just, like, you know, like, doing, like, groundwork. But, like, it's also, like, important, yeah, to, like, have these big, like, you know, symbolic, like, or, like, festive events where, like, you know, everybody can kind of pour in and do that, because, like, I feel like, you know, when, like, it's been a little while, like, since I've been able to go to, like, a big march like that. Like, like, I think actually, like, the last real big one I was able to go to was, it was the, like, March to Selma, not this past year, which was, like, the 50th anniversary, but again, it was back when, HB 56 was, you know, on the cusp of passing, and they were, you know, trying to stop that, and yeah, just, like, seeing just, like, the outpouring of, like, you know, all sorts, like, different people and different groups, and, yeah, just, like, knowing that, it's like there is this vast network at work, you know, of resistance trying to push back, and again, yeah, that just, like, you know, for me personally, that you know, like, it recharges my batteries and lets me know that, you know, it's like, yeah, like, everybody's pushing for this.
Yeah, the action was really empowering, and it was really inspirational to see all these, and not everyone was necessarily, all the groups didn't necessarily have the same exact message on their banners and such, but we were all part of the same march, so it's kind of all that really mattered.
And, like, there's, like, one event, like, I always see pictures from it, like, every year, but I've never, I guess, like, you know, gotten to go out and do it, but, like, the, like, you know, the School of the Americas protest that happens every year. I've always wanted to make it out to one of those.
What was it called?
It's the School of the Americas. It's like a you know, a military base or camp or whatever, where I guess, like, you know, people in the military in Central and South America come up and train. I believe it's in Georgia or it's somewhere here in the South, but they come up and train, and it's like, it's, you know, people who train at these camps are typically, I guess, you know, ones that are later have been involved in, like, coups or just, like, human rights violations, and, like, you know, and they receive their training here in the U.S., and they take that back and you know, can, like, I guess, you know, represent imperial interests, and, like, you know, it's, you know, it's a symbolic, event where, you know, people go and they do, like, you know, they have, like, mock caskets that they have, like, a funeral march, and then they go and they lay the caskets, and, like, up in front of the gates, and then, you know, they have, like, names of people, and they attach those, to the fence. And then there's always, like, some portion of people who, and again, yeah, it's like, you know, so long as you're not up against the fence or anything like that, like, yeah, it's non-arrestable, but there's always a portion of people who, you know, choose to climb the fence or crawl under it, you know, to try to, like, get in, and they get, you know, arrested, like, you know, there's officers on the other side, and as soon as they come down off the fence, they're waiting with handcuffs, and they arrest them and take them away. But yeah, like, again, it's like, yeah, I guess that symbolic gesture.
Yeah, like, I'll,
in my show notes, I'll put links to like all these different groups that you've mentioned. So if anybody's interested in finding out more about those groups and in these topics, they can look into that. So what else have you been up to lately?
Well, the past couple of months, most of my time was, I prioritized my fellowship, but my band Rumblepack is playing on the 27th at the Nick. So it's not a full-time band because, for one, I've been trying to finish college the past 3 years when I started going back. So on top of working and school, plus my involvement with some of these organizations, it's really hard to find time to get the full-time band. But I myself have, like, during those times, I would still write songs and make music. It was just when the time was right for finding people that had music chemistry with, and for it to just work out with many different dynamics. But so right now, the people who are playing with me at the Nick, it's Mike Gott. He's the drums, and then Billy Luttrell plays bass. And when I recorded my demo back in January, it was a switch. It was actually Billy Luttrell on drums and Mike Gott play bass. But for the show, I guess they're going to be playing at the show is their primary instruments. But they're both really good at either. So that we actually practiced last night. We have practice again Sunday. We don't get to practice a lot though because they work too, and they're also in other bands. I mean, Mike's in, if not a few, then several. And then I know that then Billy has Capsized and Hexus. So, I mean, and those are their full-time, well, that's Billy's full-time bands. And then Mike's, he seems like he's touring almost every week at some point, at least always. But, so yeah, I mean, we've all got our own thing going on. But then besides the Rumble Pack, Tino Newman, you know him?
I don't think so.
He is a good friend of mine who I met through the Baby House in Tuscaloosa back in those days. But he and I actually, I guess it's been about a week-ish, we rented a storage unit near Green Springs to practice in. Like, I live in a trailer that has paper thin walls with neighbors close to me. We can't have a drum set in there. I tried it where I live in Tuscaloosa in the same trailer. I mean, I could have probably gotten evicted. But, and then he lives in Southside with some people in a house, but the people he lives with have a full-time band. So we didn't want to have to chance balancing their band practice. So we want to be able, we actually got a really good deal because where our unit is 24/7. There's not a code. So, of course, we have a really good lock on it. So we're able to go. But the woman who rented it to us suggested doing it after 5 so the manager doesn't hear us playing. Oh. But it's one of those things we're going to have to work with. So
like, that's something I've actually heard, Jeff talk about, as like he mentioned a place called like Uncle Bob's Storage.
That's actually where we're.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Huh? Yeah, like he was saying that. Yeah, like there's a lot of bands that do that. Well, they'll just like rent the storage unit and then just like practice there. And like it's been an idea that I've had. Like I just like I would like to like go out there and spend like an evening just like seeing who shows up to practice and just saying like, hey, talk to me for like 5 minutes while y'all get ready and just figure out like what all like is going on there.
And the rent's not bad. I mean, it's. I think it's $115 a month, but he and I are splitting it. And for me, considering what it's doing for us, I mean, it's like we can't practice where I live. And even if we could, it's far away for him. Tino doesn't have a car, so it's like 30 minutes. And then it would be really inconvenient to try to practice at his house. So we're starting our own project. It doesn't have a name yet, tonight, we're at, later this afternoon, I'm going to pick him up, and we're going to get it set up. Cool. So I'm really excited. So that's, we'll see what happens.
And then, before coming down here, I'd listened to, videos that had been uploaded to Facebook for Rumble Pack, and then I listened to the track on the, Triple Tongue that you sent me, and, I thought it was cool that y'all, recorded a cover of Explosions in the Sky, that's the band I've listened to for a while.
I forgot about that. Wait, was that was a video?
Yeah, it said, y'all were kind of drunk when it was recorded, and, might have been, a little offbeat, but, putting it up anyways.
That was, my first lineup of Rumble Pack when I was still living in Tuscaloosa. The drummer at the time really wanted us to cover that, and it was at a time when we had been asked to play a show, and we eagerly said yes, and we actually only probably had about 3 songs. Which is fine, because at the time our songs were a little long. We weren't playing straightforward punk really fast or anything, so mm-hmm. But still, we didn't have a long set. Which I told him, I've seen bands, it's more important to be tight than have, but he really wanted to cover that, so we didn't. I think we only covered it once or twice, though, because I really didn't want to cover anyone. At least then. We just started.
Right.
But, people liked it. It sounded good. I like that song. Yeah, I forgot about that, though. And I forgot it was on our page. It's kind of... I guess Rumblepack's page really hasn't had that many posts. I probably only played maybe 10 shows in the past 3 years. But, I've been schoolwork this and that, so... But I'm supposed to... I'm graduating in December with no immediate plans for graduate school or anything. My plan is to take at least a year off and just work and do music. Because with school and work... I don't feel obligated to do the social justice stuff. I feel a drive to.
Mm-hmm.
So school's going to have to be on the back burner for a while. But, I'm going to have a degree in Spanish with a minor in education. And I've had practicums in schools and experience with this and that. And I feel whatever is meant for me will happen. I'm already looking for what I'm going to have for work after graduation. So I'm not really worried about it. It's not like there's not places to work around here. It might not be ideal, but as long as it keeps a roof over my head and if I can eat, drive to my job, it's all the basics. So
keep pushing it forward.
But Tino and I, we're on the same page of we aren't trying to jump into playing shows. We want to write some solid songs and get them recorded. We want merch, shirts, tapes. We want to press 7 inches, and then we want to tour. Hopefully by this time next year, we'll be, and tour as in, it might only be a week, it might only be 2 weeks, but we've only played music together, I think. I used to play in his band Mouse Teeth, but I sang and did tambourine, and just for probably a couple of months, but we've jammed together before, but it was when he was about to move out of Tuscaloosa, and we were just going through so much that we couldn't really get together to play music a lot. But now that we've decided on this, especially since we're committing to, at least we're only paying month by month, just in case. If we get caught and she asks us to leave, the manager, or you never know what's going to happen. So, but at least until September something, we have that space. So, but I'd really like to start being a local staple in Birmingham, and not just, I don't want to play shows all the time. I don't want people to be once you've heard it.
Right.
I want to be to the point, I guess what I mean by staple is where people think, who can I get to play the show? And they're an active band. They've got their shit together.
Right.
They're an actual band, Because I've had to turn down, I was supposed to play at the Firehouse. I got asked to play the Firehouse in June, and I was going to, but then work was a lot more work was a lot more hectic than I expected. And on that, on top of knowing that I really wanted Rumble Pack to play at the Nick, I didn't have my shit together, and I didn't want to just play a half-assed set at Firehouse.
Right.
And it was going to be opening for the Hussy. They're really good.
Firehouse still there?
It
or,
is, yeah.
Okay, so I guess it's the Forge that is the one that closed.
But it worked out that I dropped because I got to get my friends Dead Balloons and Freaky Deakies to play it. So it was really good. And I felt like they were a little bit more of a fit because the Hussy's pretty driving kind of psych rock. And I was going to play were kind of drony, which is fine. It doesn't all have to. I actually like when bills are eclectic.
Right.
It doesn't all sound the same, but it is what it is. You know, you can't play every show you're asked. Like, this past weekend, Rumble Pack got asked to play this coming Saturday in Montgomery. We can't. We got asked to play next Thursday at the Hive. We can't. But, I mean, it still felt good to know that someone's like, hey.
You're right.
Because these past four, like those two, and then when I got asked to play at Firehouse, and I played here at Eclipse back in May, I got asked to play those. And 2 years ago, it was the opposite. It was me being like, hey, if you ever need an opener. But, I mean, it's like at the time, I wasn't a very active act. It was like, I was still in school and everything, so. But, I mean, it takes time. You know, you can't just one day decide, hey, this is my project name, I'm going to get all these shows. Like, no, I mean, it takes. I started playing 3 years ago. I started playing classical instruments when I was younger, but as far as it's modern, like, what I'm doing, my own projects, it's been 3 years.
You know, I've heard the name, like, you know, you mentioned it earlier, like Baby House, and I was like, you know, I've only been to Tuscaloosa just like a handful of times, and that's mostly for, you know, like work related stuff. And I used to have a friend who you know, attended at Alabama, and so like the few times like the few times I had gone down to to Tuscaloosa, it's mostly been for like, you know, like urban exploration or something like that. Like, again, like when it's outside of work. But I've heard of Baby House several times, but I never got to go there. So like, what was that?
It was awesome. Like, I've never been anywhere like it. As far as, I mean, it was a house for shows, but it also was like when I was living in Tuscaloosa. That's where my main group of friends. I think in 2012, I was there almost every day. It was only about 10 minutes-ish from where I lived. And it was like a punk house. Loose term, of course. But, I mean, it was a hangout spot. And it was wild. And it was different. Like, it wasn't just punk that played there. It was garage rock and, like, surf. And there was electronic. Like, I seen a little bit of a few experimental acts and then hip-hop, but it reminded me of when Mono was still having shows. It was like, if you want to try and you want to play, you can play. You might not necessarily be able to play the show because it was so popular that people were asking. So, but eventually you'll get to play a baby house. And yeah, it was really fun. It was really wild. And but last year, it was when the person who was still, there was several people at one time, at some point in time, that were organizing the shows, but then a few of it had moved. And out of the people still living there, there was one who still wanted to have the shows, but then he decided to move to Birmingham. So the other ones, I don't blame them, didn't want to keep it going because they had, there was three baby houses in the 3 years that I was living in Tuscaloosa. And the first two were a lot more rowdy because the houses were, knew were going to be condemned. But then the last one, the one that was the last one having shows, it was nicer. And it's like, do you really want to keep getting your windows smashed and couches broken and your fans? And so, I mean, and we gotten older, you know, like, things change. So, it was, baby house had its time, but I think it definitely inspired anyone who ever went there to do their own thing. Like, whether it's having shows at their own house or just booking shows in general, not necessarily at a house, or doing your own band. I mean, it had that kind of energy. It's like, this doesn't have to die just because this house is going away. Like, I mean, when Mono was having shows, it was awesome. But, I mean, Mono taught me a lot. Like, you can carry on, like, what you like about something, you know, do your own thing. So.
And then, yeah, like, Birmingham had, like, or, you know, a place that I frequented was Helm's Deep.
Okay, I'll be there.
And then,
I went there a lot.
Yeah, like, that they had several shows there, and then yeah, like, now all those people have dispersed. And then, like, I heard the name, like, God's Butt a lot, but I've never made it out to anything there.
They can't have shows anymore, though, because, like, the neighbors. I was going to shows there semi-often back in, I think it was 2010-ish. I think it's been a while since they were able to. Unfortunately, because it's a cool house as a basement. Kind of the Helm's Deep setup as far as the house layout, but yeah, they just couldn't, which I was surprised, since God's Butt is right up the street from Helm's Deep, but Helm's Deep never got shut down.
Right.
When it was Erie, Indiana for a minute, Rumble Pack played the Rumble Pack, when I was a two-piece with my Tuscaloosa drummer at the time, but we got to play, but then the Tuscaloosa band didn't because the neighborhood. So it's weird. It's like the same house but different. I mean, maybe the neighbors were different. Maybe they were just tired of. I don't know. But
and like I think I remember hearing, as far as like with like Helm's Deep, like they would always, I guess, you know, in advance of shows,
they would let them know and ask, which was, I mean, you have to. But it's like a very mature move if you're gonna do your house. Yeah, Helm's Deep was awesome. It had its run, though. I mean, I knew Jamie and Amanda weren't going to be there forever. And, like,
yeah.
I'm glad that they did what they wanted to. Like, I miss them, but they're living their life. Like, they weren't supposed to stay in Birmingham, so they left.
And then I think, like you were saying earlier, it's like, you know, it's like that, you know, even though, like, you know, the building, like, the energy has left the building, but the energy isn't gone. It's going to other places, and it's continuing. And so, yeah, and that's one of the, you know, I guess, you know, like, the things I really like about, yeah, just like the DIY... like culture or counterculture, whatever you want to call it, is just the fact that that's like it's you know, it's like a weed or whatever. Like, you know, you can pull it up, but you know, you're just gonna get more sprouting up afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. Like you know, Mono popped up, and then, I mean, I don't know exactly what's up with it now. I feel like it's not really my place to say, because like no one really knows except for certain people. But I mean, like, it's not like we're going to forget Mono is there. And there's other, like, The Hive is something really new. Have you heard of it?
No.
Did you know where Old Seasick Records was?
Sorta.
You know where Parkside is?
Yeah.
Like, if you go down that road, like, you pass Parkside on your left, Avondale Park on your right, keep going, and it winds around a little bend towards Crestwood.
Okay.
But you don't go... Before you veer off right to Crestwood, there's those shops... You know that gas station with the taco truck sometimes? I think it's a Marathon or something.
Yeah.
But it was that little strip. Crestwood Collectibles was there for a minute. But so Seasick was on that corner. The scuba shop. You know, that place. I was thinking of a landmark. Where that scuba shop is.
Uh-huh.
Right. That one right next to it. Okay. That's where old Seasick Records was before it moved. But that's where the Hive is now. The Hive took that space. And cool. Eli Daggett is running it. At least that's his Facebook name. Maybe that's his actual name. My Facebook name is different than my actual name. So.
Uh-huh.
But Eli is doing the Hive. I went to its first show. It was really cool. It's really small in there. But, I mean, it has good energy. Like, the kind of shows they've been having there, it's, like, a lot of raw kind of music. Mm. So,
and then,
cool.
Yeah, again, I mentioned earlier, like, I guess, like, it was, you know, the Forge has shut down, but I just learned this past weekend that the folks who were doing Tuscaloosa Monorail have moved to Birmingham, and they're in the Forge. They're in that building, and they're going to be setting up shop there, and they're going to be, like, expanding and, like, changing their name to Alabama Monorail, and, yeah, making it just, like, a larger thing.
I remember I ran into Zach Travis at the Tuscaloosa Monorail at the Firehouse DIY Thrasher party a couple of weekends ago, and he told me that, but I had been drinking, so it slipped my mind. But I wasn't like blackout drunk when he told me, but I remember when he told me, and I was like, whoa, worlds colliding, because I went to a good bit of shows at the Forge. Not really the last probably year it was up, but it was going, but it's like thinking about it as the Forge, and then thinking about it how it's going to be, it's so different.
Yeah.
But so it's going to be Alabama Monorail?
Or at least that's like the tentative
what
they were thinking about doing it. Because
I mean, most of the staff doesn't even live in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah. Because like last week there was like a big like meeting for like Monolith and trying to like get everybody like touch base and see, you know, what they've gotten done since the last meeting, and they actually showed up and said that, you know, they were interested in getting involved and the possibility of like hosting their content on the website. So like, yeah, that'll be cool if that ends up working out.
Yeah, that'd be rad. And have you seen Tuscaloosa Monorail before?
No, I've not.
It's really cool. And they're on YouTube. But so I know of Monolith just so much as the Facebook presence. I think that I've liked its page.
Mm-hmm.
With just being so busy, I've kind of intentionally not really looked too much into it because I like, knew that I couldn't commit. Mm-hmm. I knew they were needing people for certain things, but so it's. Can you tell me real quick what?
Yeah. Like, I guess, like, the original idea is that it's, you know, it's called Monolith Radio, but, I don't really know, you know, it's like, it's not really a radio or, you know, radio station. It's, or at least not yet, I guess, like, in the future, once we get some amount of, like, money coming in, we're going to, like, I guess, try to set up, like, a streaming service where, like, you can just pop in at any time and just, like, see what's on the stream. But as it is currently, you know, we've got, like, our website and we're getting, content up and just, like, these, like, playlists. And so you can go and find, like, whatever show you want to listen to and then just listen to a playlist of that show. Or you could go to, like the main page and then just, like, whatever's been uploaded, it's like, you know, it's like in sequential order, and then you can just go through and like you have to hit the play button each time. It doesn't just like continuously stream to the next, but because like there's a couple of like internet radio stations in Birmingham currently. There's like Red Mountain Radio and Substrate, and then there's a third one that's slipping my mind at the moment. But
I think it's Vulcan.
That's probably right. But those are all, like, I guess, like, you know, music radio stations, and Monolith is going to focus more on the talk aspect. And so, yeah, it's like, you know, this program's going to be on there, and then, like, there's several other folks who have, been, like, you know, doing their own thing for a while now, and then, like, they're just coming under this umbrella to, I guess, you know, try to, like, solidify, you know, the presence of what's going on. And like the way that it was pitched to me is like it's supposed to be a more radical like NPR sort of like you know focusing on you know like the talk and like we're gonna have like you know arts and culture like you know different like news and current events and like we're looking to like try to get like some sort of like children's programming, like have like those and then just like radio dramas, and that sort of stuff. And then like the website launched a little while ago, like, I think, like, back in June is when we finally, like, and yeah, like, we had, like, a launch party back in May, and then, like, we weren't able to, I guess, really launch at that time, and so I think some people got, like, some mixed messages or kind of thought that, like, it had fallen apart, but,
They might have associated it with Mono not having shows for some reason, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Mono's page changed, too. Wait, no.
I don't think
so. Monolith. Is that, like, the Monolith page that I liked on Facebook, it changed to Monolith from something else.
Okay, then, yeah, that it could have been Mono beforehand. Okay. And
I could be wrong, though.
And then, yeah, like, that did, like, the launch party was the last show that they had, like, it was, like, they had the launch party, mm-hmm. and then the very next day, they were, like, no more shows, so.
There were so many rumors going on about, because it was so sudden with Bono, people were, like, you know, people were asking what happened, is it over for good, is it going to come back, so, since the Monolith, I wasn't able to go to the Monolith release, but since, I remember getting the invite, and mm-hmm. I knew about it, but, since it was there, people maybe thought, if that's not happening then.
Right. But so yeah, like now we're you know, getting back together, and it's like they're actually like partnered up with like Make Birmingham, and so we're going to have like Make Birmingham, or it's Make Beeham. And it's like a maker space, like you have to pay a membership fee. And then you can go in and use their equipment to make whatever, you know, idea that you have. But we have a room in their building now that's a recording studio that's going to be getting set up in the next week or two. And so, like, you know, it's going to be like a you know, recording studio that anybody can come in and, like, record their program. And then they'll have, like, a little, like, you know, computer set up to upload or, like, edit and upload content. And then Make Birmingham is in October going to be moving to a new space. I want to say it's out in Inslee, and it's going to be like a lot larger than the building that they're in now. So, and we're going to be transitioning to there with them and helping build out that space. And then I forget, there's going to be two more recording studios set up as well. I don't know the locations of those, but, like, the idea, you know, a couple months ago when I had heard it, is, like, you know, we were going to try to have a little setup here in Montevallo and have a setup in, like, Tuscaloosa and Huntsville. So, like, you know, all these, like, major, you know, like, urban centers or whatever in Alabama will have a place where people can go and do that. And then, you know, it all ends up on the website.
That's awesome. So is the Make Beham the Makers thing? It's not this. Is it the thing that's by Woodrow Hall, like across from where the forge was and all that?
Yeah, I believe that's them. Wait, no, because there's two like maker groups. There's Make Beham, which is like I think actually like classified as thing. You know, it's like a for profit like business. And then there's the Red Mountain Makers.
Yeah.
And Red Mountain Makers is the one that's right across from the forge.
Okay.
And they're not-for-profit.
Okay. That's what I was thinking of, the Red Mountain. So Baked Bee Hemp is different than the Red Mountain Makers.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know, have you heard about the Zine Fest later?
I saw a post on Facebook about that.
The Andy Harris... You should try to get him on the Back to the Fire.
What's his name again?
Andy Harris. Pretty sure, let me check. I'm Facebook friends with him.
And then, yeah, I'm gonna...
That's gonna be awesome. It's also, I think that they're having an opening event at the Continental Bakery.
Yeah.
And all that, like...
Yeah, because I was eventually gonna get to ask him, like, you know, see, you got a zine here on the table. I was gonna ask
him about... I was gonna give you, like, it's one of my demos, and I'm going to... I mean, you've already heard the demo, but...
Nice.
I have a... Yes, his name is Andy Harris. I'm his Facebook friend, so if you want to message him, you could, like, look him up there.
Sure.
It would be really cool to hear what he has to say about the Zine Fest, because I'm really glad Birmingham is doing that. I know Atlanta has a big... Not to say Birmingham doesn't have a big zine community, but Atlanta has a big zine fest already.
And uh-huh.
It's kind of like, oh, well... I guess we'll go to Atlanta's and, like, do it, but I mean, I remember that I tabled at Saturn, day of the Atlanta Z-Fest, otherwise I probably would have gone, but then now it's going to happen here.
And, mm-hmm. And I've been meaning to get out to, because Saturn started doing like a weekend meet and swap or whatever, and I saw that people were tabling zines there, so yeah, I want to try to make it out to that too. I've not gotten to see a show at Saturn yet, I've wanted to go. I remember it's been several years ago, but there was the only zine distro I knew of in Birmingham was Hen House, and they hosted it was called the 24-hour zine thing, and it's you have 24 hours to put together a zine, and then I participated in that with a friend, Chris West, and we put together a little zine called Pro Tips, and it's just basic computer usage. And so that's we would have it out at Food Not Bombs. So if anybody you can go to the public library, but if you don't know what to do, then you could use that. And then I've been making whenever I'm in class, I take notes, but then I inevitably end up doodling in the margins and that kind of stuff. So from all the years that I've attended college, pretty much at the end of each semester, I take my notes and I cut them up and I make a zine out of all the pictures.
You've made several zines already.
Yeah, I think I've got six or seven, and it's called Fiddledick. And,
Are you going to do the zine fest thing?
Yeah, I got to make sure, I can, ask off work and everything and be clear for that. But, I'm planning on trying to make it out to that. And, I've got several copies, a little box of Xeroxed zines that I can do for that. But, when Helm's Deep shut down and, I was at their last show, and they had a all that stuff that they were getting rid of and they weren't gonna take with them, and there's a big stack of zines, and so I just took those, I'll care for these and I'll hold on to them. And then when Green Cup closed back in 2009 or whatever, I just, all the zines I took, I was I'll look out for you. Mm-hmm. And so I've just got this filing cabinet full of zines that I've just I've been needing to do something with, so yeah, I'm so glad this is all happening.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
I think we're coming up on an hour, and I know you said that.
We go a little over.
Okay, cool.
I pushed, I told Tino that I was going to do this, and it worked out anyway, so he can go later in the afternoon. So.
Nice.
Because we're not supposed to go there, but before 5. It's hard as playing, so it's all good.
So what is the scene here that you've got?
It's a mental health scene. It's a personal story. It's about when fall 2007 through fall 2011, being diagnosed with schizoaffective, and then how that affected. I went straight to college out of high school. And I went for 1 year, and I'd always been really good with with academics, but it changed my life. I've never had any contact with my biological parents. I don't know much about them at all.
Right.
So I never saw it coming. When it started happening, I had moved to Auburn to do pre-vet. I thought that's what I wanted to do, and I was so serious about it that I quit drinking and smoking and everything. So it wasn't there was some rumor that I had taken a bunch of acid, and that wasn't the case. So I never saw it coming, and I didn't know anyone personally that had experienced something like that. But it's a story about, I was hospitalized several times in that time period. I think it was a total of 8 in those 4 years, and I was on meds. I haven't been on meds now in 3 years. They didn't work well for me. The antidepressants made me go from a little bit of depression to, and then the benzos for anxiety, they just made me so sedated, and I was non-functional really. I couldn't hold down a job. School wasn't working out. My concentration was awful. Creativity was pretty non-existent. And then the things they put me on for the hallucinations, actually made them increase. So, you know, like, I mean, I have done psychedelic drugs and smoked weed, but I've never seen anything that wasn't there until I was put on psychiatric drugs.
Mm.
Which, I mean, they tell you, like, you need these, but... So it's not just a story about what happened to me, it's also about my views of psychiatric medication. And I know that I've known people that they help them. Mm. I know people who, when they don't take their antidepressants, their depression is crippling, they won't get out of bed. You know, I'm not trying to cast a judgment that you don't, I would never tell someone to, like, stop taking a medication because, especially, you can't, you have to wean off of it slowly, you can't just, but for me, everything that I tried, which was a lot of shit, made everything worse. So, it's like my alternative view, I guess, on, but then, like, it ends hopeful, it ends with hope. So, I mean, it's a really dark story, like, there's nothing uncensored, but I felt like it was, it needed to be said, because depression, anxiety, mood disorders, mental illness in general, trauma, hospitalizations for, I mean, just go, like, there's several reasons you could be in this, there's different reasons you could be in the psych unit. It's not just suicide attempts, but then bipolar and schizophrenia, a lot of people have it, that it's a lot of voices, it's a lot of people's voices that are unspoken for.
Mm.
It's like, it's really, it, I mean, it can be a big stigma to talk about.
Right.
It's really, I mean, bipolar alone, not necessarily even with hallucinations, people automatically think, oh, they're crazy. They're just going to be moody and unstable, and that's not always the case. And then with schizophrenia, there's a stigma that people are violent. And there's so many different...
Yeah.
It's a big spectrum.
And then, I mean, I'm not going to, you know, call anybody out, obviously, but, like, I mean, I know a lot of people personally who are affected by different things, and yeah, like, you know, everybody handles it differently, or you know, like, they, you know, they're affected differently, and their approaches to dealing with it are different from one another, and, yeah, like, I think it's, you know, that's great that you, you know, have, you know, written that down and are putting it out to share, because, you know, personally, like, you know, me being, like, a you know, white male, it's, like, a lot of, like, I feel like a lot of perspective that I have is from, like, reading zines of other people's experiences, like, things that I've never had to deal with, but reading somebody's just, like, heartfelt story of, like, you know, this is what's happened to me, and so, yeah, like, again, I think it's great that you're putting that out there.
It took up, like, I think I started writing in 2008. Katie Dunn was actually the one who got me introduced to zines, really. I'd never really, I mean, I probably had seen them, but I didn't know what they were called, and I never thought about making my own, but during that time, I think I met, like, we met in 2000, I mean, I grew up with her in Vestavia school system, but we met about the zines, I think it was 2008, but then in the next 3 years, I was in the hospital, and then I was in on med, so, I wrote it, but then I remember it was like, I didn't feel like it was, I didn't like, it wasn't what I wanted to be my first draft. So, and then I got nervous about putting it out there for obvious reasons. But then 2 years ago, yeah, I think it was like, right at 2 years ago, Tino, the person I'm going to practice later today, who I'm reading the unit with, he helped me publish this. He had a hookup somehow to get it printed for free, and I wrote everything, but he's the one who did the art and the layout, so all of the abstracts and the page layout and all the, that's him. But so it took me, I guess it was about 5 year period of me actually starting to write it and then drafting it and then actually getting the courage to just do it, mm-hmm. go through with it. But I've gotten nothing but positive feedback, and positive as in, like, encouraging, and then, whenever he printed this, well, this is a, like, I had reprinted them for the Saturn swap, but the first batch that he did, I think he printed 50.
Hmm.
I remember one time outside of the forge, he was handing that to people, and one time at Baldwin Tree, so I don't know who all even has it, but that was kind of the point.
Yeah.
And it's not anonymous, my name is in there. But that was kind of the point, is to put a face on the story, because there's nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, it was just one of those things that happened. And so, And it, the other purpose of it was, I mean, if someone reads it and it's, if they see, if they can relate to it at all, and just to know that it is something that can happen, that, I mean, you can heal.
Oh yeah, like, and I know, yeah, like, I find, like, you know, whenever I'm, like, just, like, frustrated or angry or something, like, I try to be, like, you know, like, focus that into, like, creative energy and, like, you know, take my frustrations, and rather than, like, you know, like, getting angry with somebody or a situation, like, I just, yeah, like, again, just try to do something else with that, like, transmute it into something else, and I think that's, yeah, like, one of the best things somebody can do with negativity is to transmute it into something positive.
Yeah, and I agree, and also, writing and getting this published was very therapeutic. Like, I haven't read it since published it, I didn't need to because I wrote it and I lived it, but it was closure, it was complete closure. So I felt like it was, like, writing it for me was like putting all the pieces together, and mm-hmm. if I was able to find a way to say it, which I did, then I was like, okay, I can let this go, and especially just distributing it to the public. Mm. And I have it on a Tumblr, so in case, for some reason, if it got erased off my computer, or even though it's on a Google Doc, but I just have, it was like, I can never exactly rewrite this again. I mean, I could kind of, but it's been, now it's been even 2 more years since I wrote it, and so I wanted to always have, and I have my own one copy, but just, in, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. So,
right.
And even though it is on Tumblr, you can access it from there, I still like having the scenes. I mean, it's like, just actually reading a pamphlet, a paper, and not just looking at the screen.
Right, it's a different experience.
And Tumblr made it easy to use the files of the zine art and just put it on there, which is, I mean, it's fine, but this is more, I mean, especially as more, the more technology is advanced, like, never losing that we do still need to make things,
mm-hmm.
not just put them on a computer.
Yeah, like, different, but it's like, you know, a lot of the artwork that I create is digital, and so, like, I just, like, you know, my fear is, like, you know, if my hard drive ever crashes, like, you know, I've got, like, a backup here and there, but, it's like, you know, until it's been printed out and made real, then it's just ones and zeros, and it can disappear like that.
Yeah. Exactly. That's scary to think about, like, all of your work.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, that would, yeah, I don't want to think about
that. But at least you have it backed up. I mean,
yeah.
There's always, I mean, you can back it up as much, and then hopefully you hope for the best.
But, and then, yeah, like, I guess, you know, the ultimate goal is to, you know, like, you know, it's like, get physical representations of it, but then get those physical representations, like, out of my closet and into the hands of other people. Like, that's when it's, you know, yeah, like, solidifies. Because, yeah, it's like, that's when it becomes, like, a shared experience. Something else I was gonna say. I think I was on something to do with zines. I know, yeah, like, I guess, you know, going back to Puna Bombs, like, I like the sort of zines that I you know, keep out there. It's like, I always try to have something like, like, yeah, I struggled for a little bit. I was like, you know, I wanted to put, like, I guess, like, you know, political stuff or, like, anarchist, like, you know, literature out there, but then it's like, well, I don't want to, you know, push my ideology or my, you know, that sort of stuff on anybody. And so, like, I made the choice, like, well, I'm only going to put zines out that are, like, I feel like are relevant to, yeah, I was like, you know, with, like, the pro tips, like, stuff that's, like, you know, learning, like, educational, like, how to do computers, or there's, like, a zine on, like, you know, mental health and resources that people can utilize, and just, like, one zine on, like, you know, what to do when you've been called out. And so it's like, you know, just like stuff that I feel like have practical applications rather than theoretical applications. And then, like, the last podcast I recorded, was talking to friend Ryan, who is like at UAB in their anthropology department, and he just did a this real big like nationwide study on abnormal sexual behavior, and like specifically looking into like BDSM culture, and so like I brought out like a couple zines with me to that, because like, you know, like growing up here in the South, like, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of education on that in you know, any shape or form, and like most of my education I feel like came from like zines that I read. Like I've got one, you know, I took out that podcast called like Learning Good Consent or something like that, and it's just like how to like, you know, view and approach that, and I felt like that was like, you know, really you know, helped me learn how to approach situations, and yeah, like again, I think, you know, zines are a great thing, you know, like self-publication, getting your story out, and then yeah, like having it physical and real rather than like, you know, just like on the internet or on Facebook, where it's just like, you know, it's a post that gets seen for like an hour or two and then it gets buried under everything else. So yeah, I think it's great that there's still, you know, physical representations floating around.
Yeah, definitely. So your friend had a podcast too, or was it different?
This is a study through UAB. And he's actually going to a like this big conference, I think towards the end of the month, where he's going to be presenting with like all these other you know, researchers from like much larger schools than UAB. He's like a little bit intimidated, because, you know, he's coming from UAB and there's all these other, like, I guess, you know, Ivy League schools or whatever that he's going to be sitting at a table with. But, like, after reading his paper and talking to him, like, I mean, he seems to know what he's talking about. And, so, yeah, like, I'm pretty sure he can hold his own.
Interesting. So they're doing it specifically on abnormal sexual behavior?
Yeah, like, or again, like, I guess, like BDSM and, like, kink and that sort of stuff. And, like, it was just, like, a big, like, he went online to, like, you know, to, like, different subreddits and other websites, with, like, a questionnaire, and he's just, you know, talking about how, I guess, like, you know, the level of scrutiny that these people, like, you know, put him through to, like, make sure he was legitimate and, you know, he was and doing what he said he was doing, because, it's like, the risk is so large, like, you know, if you know, somebody gets outed, yeah, then yeah, that, like, ruins yeah, their life. He mentioned how, like, you know, like, one person was, like, in, like, divorce proceedings, like, you know, his, what he did in the bedroom got brought up, and because of that, lost custody of his children.
Yeah. That's fucking wild. I mean, that's a real thing, like, being out of certain things is not...
But, I know, yeah, I'd like to think that, you know, collectively, like, you know, we're all, like, you know, moving forward, and you know, we're, like, you know, some people, you know, fighting the good fight or whatever, like, you know, trying to get us to a better place.
Definitely.
So I guess, you know, is there, like, any other, like, you know, topics you want to talk about or closing remarks?
I wanted to mention the Girls Rock Birmingham.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This summer, they were having their volunteer meetings at Saturn, but I was unable to make them because of work until the first Girls Rock Birmingham event I went to was, they had a craft night the week before the camp, and it was to make things for the camp. Like, someone had printed out a lot of pictures of female musicians and, or performers, and, I guess you say musicians, like, anyway, so... We would put them on construction paper or whatever and write some quotes and decorate them. They're supposed to look very like encouraging and empowering. And then they had made other things with, they were kitten tips. They had little pictures of cats, and they would say things like respect people's space or wash your hands or stay hydrated, and like all very real things because it was really hot, and you know, we didn't want anyone fighting or feeling uncomfortable. And so there was a lot of prep that went into it, and even though I was just there for a couple of hours one night, I knew that they'd been meeting for a while. And so I lent them one of my practice amps, and they had asked for other equipment, like a drum kit, and it was really awesome to see that all actually be able to pan out and work out. Like, they got everything that they needed, I think. At least, I'm pretty sure, because the camp happened, and I was only able to stop by one afternoon, or it was actually one morning before work. I went and sat in on one of the young girls' bands practicing, and I was under the impression that most of the girls there probably hadn't played an instrument before, or that was the whole purpose, was just jump in there. And although it was a really good energy, like, there was coaches for them, and it was really awesome because they got to, the end product was they got to play at Secret Stages that afternoon, which was this past Saturday. I didn't get to go to any of Secret Stages, but I know that they played, and they each played, I think, a song. But I plan to get really involved with that camp next summer. And it was really awesome. Like, I could tell that it was a really special experience for not just for everyone involved, like the girls at the camp and then the people who were coaching them. It was, like, that's like with teaching, you know, you both learn. I thought it was really awesome that Saturn was able to let them do it there.
And, like, what is, like, the age group there?
Seemed like most were middle school, high school. Wasn't sure that... They might not even have been high school. They were young.
Cool.
But it seemed like... They looked like more like middle school. They looked so young. I think that most of their parents had to drop them off or whatever, so it must have been...
Yeah, like, and it's stuff like that's, like, really encouraging because, like, it's, like, I feel like, you know, experiences like that are, you know, potentially, like, you know, really, like, radicalizing, like, it allows, like, you know, like, really, like, you know, gets you to open up your eyes and see, like, see yourself as an active player in what's going on. And I know, like, for me, like, you know, it wasn't until I got into college until I realized, like, oh, hey, like, I'm a person who can do things. I'm not just, like, a recipient of things. I can participate. And so, yeah, like, starting at that age, like, it's, yeah, like, they're going to be able to do a lot.
And thought it was really awesome to see that it wasn't just classical, it wasn't a classical theory approach. Like, it wasn't, like, here's how you read music. Now go home and practice for this many hours. It was just jumping in there and, like, all right, like, one's on the drums and then guitar and bass and someone's singing. And it was very, like, play open 3/5 and what they were doing rhythm. And it was the basics. And, like, that's where you have to start. And, and they were all talented. I mean, like, especially since it was just 1 week. And I'm sure they were nervous playing about Saturn. Playing at Saturn. I mean, I still get nervous playing shows, but I was really proud of them. I wish I could have been more involved. I wish I could have seen them play, but I mean, the little that I did see is like what made me wish that. I mean, it just didn't work out with my job, but there's always the future.
Right.
And I'm not sure what Girls Rock Bingham is going to do next, but I'm part of their Facebook private group and all that, so be in touch with it and updated.
And, like, one of the projects with Monolith is, or like, because Monolith Radio is like a branch of a larger like parent organization called Radio Free Alabama, and so yeah, like there's Monolith Radio, which is like the website and yeah, it's like hosting content, and then there's like somebody else who's handling like Max Rykov is handling like the live aspects, and so like whenever there's going to be like a live performance, that's like his deal, and then Mike is handling like workshops and educational, and so like they've been having like workshops all summer at like a Desert Island Supply Co. Like having like children like writing radio dramas. It's like they like, you know, like I forget like the exact age groups, but I want to say like, you know, like middle school, possibly even younger than that, and like having, you know, these kids come in and just like teaching them like the very basics of just like, you know, like the structure of a story, and then like, well, what do you want your story to be about, and then just like, you know, like, you know, just sort of like, you know, facilitating the process, but these children are writing their own stories, and then at the end of the workshop they get to like record their awesome. Their program. So yeah, it's like I think that's it's you know, that's a very important thing is yeah, like getting the up and coming generations involved and in what's going on.
Definitely. I guess like the last thing I want to mention is I occasionally write for F-Bomb. Like I am the F-Bomb. Have you seen that site before?
I don't think so.
Like a feminist blog. But I really like how I feel like I can write about pretty much anything and anytime I want. Like there's not a, it's not like I have to meet a certain quota or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You could write once, you could write often. But I guess as like broad as it sounds, it's like, I guess it's geared towards females or whoever identifies as like female, but for feminist, for like femme issues, but it's not just specifically like I'm going to talk about something specifically that's feminist. It's like hearing from the female perspective.
Right.
And there's just various, like I've seen, there's some about, like romance stories, personal stories, like people talking about mourning and different kind of losses and different life experiences, like jobs, and I've written a few things. And like, so yeah, it's another outlet.
I can definitely yeah, like I'll check that out and certainly add it to the show notes.
Sweet. So for your podcast, it's like a transcription.
Or I mean, it's not going to be like the text of what we're saying, but it's just like anything that got mentioned.
Yeah.
Like I'll go in and like find those websites and just add a link into that, and then so yeah, like below the player, you can go and see like all those topics or places.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Back to the Fire. As I said in the episode, I'm going to have all of the links to the different groups and programs that we talked about in the show notes. I really do encourage you to check those out if you are at all interested and want to get involved with anything. Because, yeah, like, you know, it's important for us to get involved in shaping the future and getting others involved as well, getting the up-and-coming generations to realize the immense strength and power that they have, and letting them utilize and tap into that while they still have their youth to help lead the charge. So, yeah, check all that stuff out, and be looking forward to more episodes. I've already got the next episode recorded. All I gotta do is edit it and put some bookends on it. So, yeah, I hope you have a good, until next time, be well.